This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Barbara Cook has been called a high priestess of cabaret and one of Broadway's most beloved lyric sopranos. On Broadway, she originated the role of Marion the Librarian in The Music Man and co-starred in the original production of She Loves Me, which was recently revived on Broadway. She also starred in Leonard Bernstein's Candide. Her concert career has taken her around the world. When I spoke with her last year, she had a new CD called Closest Pages in a Book, featuring the lyrics of Dorothy Fields.
We'll be closest pages in a book, my love and I. So close, we can share a single look, share. That before I hear your laugh, my laugh breaks through. And when a tear starts to appear, my eyes grow misty too.
I asked Barbara Cook about her early Broadway career. She had sung before Broadway, but she made her acting debut in her first Broadway musical, Flahouli.
When I first started doing them, I had never acted. And when I got Flahouli, I was just floored because, you know, I really hadn't been here long trying to do this. And I got a leading role, Jerome Cortland. And I played the juvenile and ingenue roles is what you would say now. And the thing is, though, we didn't have secondary roles. They were the primary roles, so that the storyline hung on our storyline. So we had a lot of responsibility as far as the show goes, and I was very nervous about it. I was convinced all the time that I was going to be replaced by somebody in the chorus any minute, you know, so I was quite nervous. I'm a nervous person. Listen, I'm just finally beginning to settle down a little bit in my old age.
how has nervousness affected you over the years?
I don't know. I guess I just went ahead and did it anyway. I'm surprised sometimes when I think about it how I was surely one of the most nerve-wracked people you've ever known.
Well, what were the symptoms?
Oh, well, my hands would perspire so much that you know, perspiration would just drip off the palms of my hands. Honest to God, I'm amazed. And I was just always so nervous about how people going to like this or think about that. And it took me a long time to settle that. I don't know. And yet, at the same time, I always had a lot of confidence in my singing. So there's that dichotomy there that I don't completely understand. For instance, in Flahouli, as I say, I was sure I was going to be replaced any minute. And I developed all kinds of nervous ailments that I'd never had before. And I remember we were in Philadelphia trying out the show. And I remember coming in one evening saying to myself, if this is what it's like to do musical comedy, I've got to try to find something else to do. I can't stand this. I can't take this. And at the same time, I remember hearing an orchestration for the first time for one of my songs. And I wasn't able to phrase a particular line in the same way that I had in rehearsal and the way that I wanted to do it. And so the conductor, Maurice Levine, said, Barbara, you know, you're going to have to do this a little differently. And I said, but Maurice, you know, that doesn't work that way. Change the orchestration. And he said, Barbara, we can't change the orchestration. It's expensive and other than. And I said, well, Maurice, you know, they hired me to do what I do. And I can't do what I do with this orchestration like this. So they changed it. But when I think back, that doesn't sound like someone who's very scared, does it?
No, it sounds like someone who has chutzpah.
Yeah, doesn't it? So I don't know, those two things existed side by side.
So you had confidence in your singing, but maybe not so much confidence in either you as a human being or something?
You got it. Right there, you said it.
In your early days on Broadway, you had the image of the ingenue. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I don't know. A lot of the roles I played were not really ingenue roles. I just think I looked so much like an ingenue that people thought of me as the quintessential ingenue for years. Certainly, okay, for instance, when I did Oklahoma, I didn't play Laurie, which is, well, even Laurie's not really so much of an ingenue. She's a very spunky lady. But I played Ada Wanny. I played the comedy role. And the first time I did Carousel, I played Carrie. I didn't play Julie. It was only later on that I played Julie, who's really like a leading lady. So then when I did Candide, Cunegonde is like a cartoon of ingenues. She's a cartoon. And she finally, at the end of the show, she's a very old lady with a hump on her back. And, you know, it's, and yet I've been tagged with this ingenue thing. Isn't that funny?
So did that affect the image that you thought you were supposed to have?
You know, I think maybe it did. I guess it did. I don't know how. I didn't think about that so much until you just said it.
One change that I know happened in your life, and this was a physical change, is that there was a period, I'm not sure how old you were, when you ended up putting on a lot of weight.
Uh-huh.
And I imagine that changed the kind of roles you could get, even.
Well, yeah, sure, absolutely. For a while I thought that my memory of that time was that I wasn't being sent things to do, you know, sent scripts, I mean. But that's not true. I was being sent scripts. I just didn't want to work, I think. I think it was that period when I was sort of shifting over from playing all these kind of youthful roles, and I didn't know quite where to aim myself. Do you know? It was an awkward time. I think I would have felt guilty if I just said to myself, well, I'm just going to take a few years off here. And so I think that's maybe one reason why I started gaining weight. I don't know. It sort of gave me an excuse to not work. I have no idea. Listen, if I knew, I'd tell you. Boy,
right.
I don't have
right.
a clue.
Right. So what effect did it have on your work as an actress and as a singer?
Well, it kept me from working, I think, for a while there. And then what happened is in, 1973, I did a long tour all through the summer and into the fall. It was a concert of all Gershwin material. It was the 75th anniversary of Gershwin's birth. And it was sort of a big year celebrating Gershwin that year. And that was the first time in a long time that I had sung as myself, if you will, rather than singing as a character. And I loved doing it. And I remember saying to one of the agents involved, gosh, I really would like to do some cabaret. And he said, but Barbara, there's no place to play. And within a year, cabaret had a kind of renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time 74 rolled around, Wally Harper and I decided to get together and see what we could come up with. And in the middle of 74, we went into a little place called Brothers and Sisters. And we had been asked to come in for a couple of weeks, and then we stayed the whole summer. So we were there for about 7 weeks. And then, believe it or not, the next stop was Carnegie Hall. Carnegie Hall with a live album being done. Because what had happened was when we were at Brothers and Sisters, Herbert Breslin, who is the manager for Pavarotti, had heard us and had decided to do this concert.
Singer Barbara Cook is my guest. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with singer Barbara Cook. I know you've said that two of your great influences musically were Judy Garland and Mabel Mercer. And what interested me about that is that they're really opposites as performers. You know, Judy Garland was very emotional. There was always this tragic aura about her on stage. Whereas Mabel Mercer was very regal. She sang everything as an art song and sang with a certain amount of emotional distance in a way. You never felt she was necessarily singing about herself.
That's interesting.
And she was just so regal on stage. And I'm wondering what in terms of stage presence, if you felt you took things from each of them.
Well, When Judy was here at the Palace, there's a little after-hours club. It used to be called the Little Club. It was no, that's wrong. It was called the Gold Key Club. And it was a private club. You had to have this little gold key if you were a member to get in. And I knew the men who played piano there. Very often, she would come over after her performance and sing some more for herself and for her friends. And so when she was going to be there, he would call me and I would come in so I could hear her do this stuff just for herself. And having a chance to observe her so close, I really learned a lot for the, you know, I never have, still have never had any coaching per se. My voice teacher mainly was interested in technique, but I haven't had a lot of help with how do you sell a song or put it over, if you know what I mean. What I think I learned from Garland during those months was to think about shaping a song so that it had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and so that it had a kind of emotional line, do you know? Not necessarily the musical line, because I think I learned that working on Candide more, but that it had an emotional line. And that was something that hadn't occurred to me before. And with Mabel, she had this very idiosyncratic way of using words that could be so effective. That and also her take on a lyric was so personal. I'd never heard anybody have that kind of personal take on a lyric. Do you know what I mean by that? Her sense of irony was so strong, and I think actually her sense of humor in a song was greater than anybody I've ever heard. She broke so many rules. She sang consonants, you know, and you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to sing vowels and get off the consonants.
Now, explain what you mean by that.
Well, for instance, a word like wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we would be told to hold that wah, you know, to hold that, because that's how you get the sound out, and to get off that next N and D as fast as you can. Wonderful. But, or to sing wonderful, do you see?
Mm-hmm.
But she would do things like wonderful.
Yes.
And it's more wonderful. So I learned that kind of thing from her.
Gee, you know, you're absolutely right. I never
and
noticed that
a
before.
Song like Remind Me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were just going to sing that straight, you might sing, Remind me not to find you so attractive. Remind me that the world is full of men. But she would sing, Remind me not to find you so attractive. Remind me. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, you know, you got to be judicious with that stuff. But, boy, she sure as hell knew how to do it, I'm telling you.
Well, that probably gave you permission to do things, too,
yeah,
that you discovered on your own.
Sure. I think so.
Do you think your voice has gone through different periods as you've gotten older?
Well, most voices do change timbre. They get darker. And certainly I don't have those light high notes like I did during the Candide days. But, you know, I have other stuff. I have a much greater ability to put emotion into a song, much greater ability than I had in those years. It's amazing. When I used to do those cast albums, the albums were done the second Sunday after we opened, or the third Sunday soon after we opened, and I found that as I played the show, I found more and more things, and I liked the performances better, say after 3-4 months. You know, what used to happen is in the show albums, I was feeling so much, and I was getting maybe 1/8 of that into the voice. Do you know?
Yeah, now how do you find a way to get that in?
Well, I guess it's just confidence in doing it.
It must be really good to like how your voice is changing and feel, you know, more expression going into it? And
well, yeah, I do. I, of course, I'd like to be able to do everything. You know, I want to still be able to sing Q over X up there, but I can't do that anymore. But it's okay, because I got other stuff that I really like better if I had to choose.
Barbara Cook recorded last year. She has a new CD called Live from London. From it, let's hear I See Your Face Before Me.
I see your face before me, crowding my every dream. There is your face before me. You are my only theme. It doesn't matter where you are, I can see how fair you are. I close my eyes and there.
This is Fresh Air.